Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 25th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long, and happy anniversary there, buddy. I know we just had one last week.
I know. For a second there, I thought maybe we had the notes mixed up and we were repeating the same item.
But no, the weird thing is that we started the podcast, the PokerCast, the best PokerCast on the planet, 5 years ago on June 15th, right?
Yeah.
But we created Annie Up Publishing, our company that has a magazine and everything else, on June 24th. 2 years ago.
See, if you weren't so slack back then, we could have had the same anniversary.
Hey, it's not me. I blame those little paper pushers up in Tallahassee, because we had our crap together.
That's true, we did.
Just took a little longer to put it in, so it would have been nice to have the anniversary to all have been together. But certainly, yes, 2 years. We're still here.
Yeah, I can't believe it. 2 years have gone by, not working for the man.
I asked my wife to pinch me this morning just to find out whether it's true, and also because when she's pinching me, she's not slugging me. So, you know, a little better for me. But I guess a special shout-out here to our longtime listener, Brian Fons, up in Chicago. He's a big wig up there at Corporate Creations, and he actually helped us create the company.
Yep.
And the anniversary did not go unnoticed by him, as he sent us a hilariously custom birthday card. Little picture of him hanging out with a little player named Jennifer Harmon.
Jeez.
Probably going to be doing some big things at some point, I'm guessing. and she apparently is mouthing happy 5th anniversary to Annie Up for the podcast. But yeah, we appreciate that. And it's been a fun 2 years.
Yeah, it's been pretty incredible. I just can't believe, you know, some of the stuff that we're doing for a living now. It's ridiculous, you know. I mean, like later on in the show, we're going to interview Chris Rose from, you know, the best damn sports show, period, and all those poker shows. I mean, you know, we're getting paid to do this. It's awesome.
Paid to do it. Not much. A couple nickels. But hey.
Hey, money's money.
Well, you know, sometime, maybe just because we've been so busy with the company, Chris.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I've never heard of this movie Interstate 60, which I'm sure you have, right?
No.
No, you haven't heard of it either?
No.
You know, but it's all seriousness. I'm shocked that I haven't heard about this movie because of the star power in this movie. All these cameos from all these big-time stars, including an absolute hilarious profanity-laced bit from Michael J. Fox at the beginning of the movie that I'm sure I would have heard about. But anyhow, this movie has just escaped my consciousness for however long. And, you know, wife's got that little Netflix on Wii thing where we can kind of do it on demand, right? So
yeah.
We're sitting around, nothing to watch. So we're like, oh, yeah, this sounds interesting. So we watched this Interstate 60 movie, all right?
Yeah.
And they had one scene in that, you know, there's no poker in this, but they had one scene in it that had great things to talk about in terms of poker. And real quickly, I'll set up the protagonist in this movie got dorked on the melon by a bucket, all right?
Uh-huh.
So he's at the hospital. He's being held for observation. Wakes up the next morning. Christopher Lloyd, you know, professor from Back to the Future, right?
Yeah, he's actually the doc, but okay, go ahead.
Oh, okay, yeah, whatever. I haven't seen that movie either.
He'll always be Jim Ignatowski to me. But...
Yes, there you go. There you go. he shows up and to administer some tests to this guy, right? So what he says to the guy is, you know, hey, I'm going to show you a playing card, and you shout out the suit. And as soon as you shout it out, I'm going to show you another one, and we'll go as quickly as we can, and we'll see how many of them get right. All right? Easy enough, right?
Yeah, sounds easy to me.
So he starts, and he's like, club, spade, heart, club, spade. He gets down to the end, and the kid's like, I did pretty well, didn't I? And Christopher Lloyd goes, no, you failed. And he's like, what? And he picks up the spades, and they are actually black hearts.
Yeah.
And the hearts are black, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They're the opposite, but they look exactly the same. They just changed the colors. So the guy messed all of them.
Oh, man.
He got 50% on this test. And, of course, the guy goes, hey, shenanigans. But, you know, it brought up two poker topics of discussion for me, I think.
Wow, so are we actually going to get to the topics?
One lightweight, one heavyweight.
We're like 8 minutes in, and we still haven't even figured out what the hell you're going to talk about.
I haven't even got to the sanding part of the story yet. All right, so the lightweight one is, you know, it made me think about these whole four-color decks that are out there.
Yeah.
You know, and last week we talked about, we yucked it up over these, you know, these French decks that had different letters on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, our good friend Jason at J Design has designed some great cards, and he's kind of, on his really cool ones, he's kind of moved the pips around a little bit, so it's a little different. So I guess my lightweight question, Chris, is, what do we think about these alternative-looking decks, and will they ever catch on, or will people continue to, arr, when they see stuff that's not how they expect it to be?
Well, I can't believe you're asking me this. This is unbelievably great timing. This is not planned at all. This is the truth now. You know how a lot of times on Fridays I'll hang out with my family and play cards with them?
Yes.
Well, last year, I gave my father a deck of J-Design playing cards because they're just awesome cards, and I want him to have a plastic deck that will last forever, and whenever we go up there, we'll play with real cards and everything.
You don't want to go up there and play with, you know, paper cards.
No, exactly. You know, exactly. I mean, hell, if I'm making the trip, you better have the good stuff. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right.
So every Friday night, we start playing, and at least once a night, my father would be like, oh! I thought that was a three. I should have a full house. Because Jason had this cool thing where he made the four pips go up and down.
Right, right, right.
Every Friday for a year, I have had to deal with this. Finally, on Father's Day, I gave him another J-Design deck that has the four pip
more traditional.
Yeah. And now he's like, all right, now I'm going to kick your ass. And I'm like, yeah, Dad. Yeah, that was the reason why you were losing. So, I love these new decks, and I actually, I'm not a connoisseur, but a collector of these cards. I love to have different decks, and whenever something new comes out or whatever, I mean, you can see, like, on the shelves in my room, there's all these setups and different decks of cards and stuff. I love them. I think they're so cool. I love the artwork and everything. So, for me, I love it. Do I think other people, you know, I think the older they are, the less likely they're going to be to want to see change. I mean, I can imagine a stud game being dealt, you know, with those French cards. Good God.
Yeah, four-color French cards. Yep.
I mean, what would that have been like, you know, a stud game down the street? But me, I like them. I think it's cool. But I don't know. How do you feel about these?
I mean, this is actually really perfect how this is all falling together here, because that leads right into the heavier weight discussion out of this is that when the protagonist in the movie called shenanigans on Christopher Taxi Lloyd, he said, you know, hey, it's all a matter of perception.
Yeah.
You know, we sometimes, the problem is we see things as we expect them to be, not how they really are.
Right.
And he talked about how, you know, how kids are so easy to pick up on things because they had no expectations of what something's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, therefore, they see things for what they really are. So, I spent a lot of time, actually, a lot of the week, and it's almost ridiculous how much time I've spent thinking about this.
Meanwhile, our business is falling down around us, and we won't see a third anniversary. But, you know, hey, you're spending time on this topic. That's great.
But, you know, that's a valuable lesson beyond just what the cards look like. It's a valuable lesson in poker that, you know, I see this all the time when we talk about hands of the week or stuff on the forum where people talk, you know, well, hey, I knew that guy couldn't have this because of this. And I think it's because we've conditioned ourselves to expect that. And because of that, we miss what's really there.
Yeah.
Have I lost you?
No, no, absolutely not. I know exactly what you're saying. And it's true. And, you know, Vanessa Russo has a little – she's real big into riddles and things like that. And she brought up one on her boot camp that I went over and covered at Daytona. And it was a there was a saying up on the screen. And she goes, you know, what's the difference between these two sayings or something? And you had to find the difference. And, like, one person in the whole room figured it out. But she said that, like, of, like, 100 school children, this is, like, a thing, 100 school children, like, 95 of them figured it out, like, in the first minute.
Yeah.
And it's because kids look at them and think, and that's the way, and that was one of the things that she was professing in her teachings, was that don't assume anything and don't look at anything with, a calloused eye, you know, kind of look at it with every possible angle. And what it ended up being was all the words on top had straight letters and all the words on the bottom had curved letters. Right. You know, like an S was on the bottom, but an M was on top.
Gotcha.
And it was like everyone was looking for all these deep meanings, like, oh, it's from the West, and that one's from the South. And, you know, I mean, it was weird. But, no, I totally understand what you're saying. And it's true. You sometimes get complacent because your mind, repetition, starts to, you know, say automatically assume things, and that's just not the way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just really interesting to me because how many of us have had this situation happen to us? You know, we started playing poker. It's a lot of fun. We seem to be doing really well when we started, right?
Yeah.
And then you start reading books, listening to PokerCast, watching TV, going to camps, and all of a sudden you realize you're not winning as much money as you used to be. You're like, WTF. And I think it's really that you've become a better player, but now your expectations have changed and how you look at things. I mean, when you first started, you thought King Trey suited was a monster because it suited.
Yeah.
And played it all the way to the river, and you luck boxed the flush, and you made a lot of money, where now you know you would never do that, and it could be frustrating at times. But I think it's just a perception. It's not reality.
And the other thing I wanted to mention, too, is it makes sense that they used hearts and clubs and reversed them because, you know...
Hearts and spades, sorry.
I mean, hearts, that's what I said. No, you said that. No, hearts and spades. Because a spade is a heart turned upside down if you look at a pip.
Yes,
and it just has the stem. And so when I used to always try to draw the pips a lot. I used to always screw up the spade until I finally realized that. So I just turned the paper upside down, then draw a heart, and then turn it back and, you know, and put the stem on it. But that was the perfect example for them to use to try to confuse somebody, is to change the hearts and the spades like that. But that is pretty weird. And I got to watch this movie now. I hate you. You do that to me all the time. You get
me
interested in something that I shouldn't be interested in.
You will not have to be disappointed. It's very quirky. It's probably an indie film, which is probably no one's heard of it. But definitely check it out, Interstate 60. If nothing else, just watch the first 5 minutes and watch Mike and Jake Fox go crazy. And then it's only like 20 minutes later before you see the whole card thing. And then after that, you can shut it off. But if you do, then you're going to miss all the scenes with Amy Smart. And, you know, that's going to be a crime, too, I think. So. Well, you know, I also found some time, you know, since obviously the business was collapsing. So I just, you know, threw in the towel, right?
Yeah.
And actually played and wait for it, Chris. Pause. I played some poker this week.
No way.
I know. Huh. I don't know where I found the time. In fact, I'm pretty sure I don't know where I found the time. But I played a little, and, you know, some night I was working really late, and I'm like, you know what? I've worked a lot today. I'm going to see what's on PokerStars, logged in. And they had, getting ready to start in the next 3 minutes, they had a fixed limit 5-card draw tournament going for like $4 or something ridiculously small, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? That's intriguing because, you know, when I was playing more often on PokerStars, I love playing the pot limit 5-card draw because it seemed to me more layered. You know, you could some things you could do and to you know, suck a lot of people in. But fixed limit, I'm like, that's really interesting. So I played it, and I gotta say, if there is a more mechanical game of poker out there, I would love to hear it. Now I know people are gonna say, limit hold'em is so boring, so mechanical. But you have never seen machinery until you played limit 5-card draw. You got two betting limits, two betting levels, you know, before the draw, after the draw. And, you know, all the information is, like, right there in front of you for the most part. You can't see everybody's cards, but, you know, when they're drawing two, you can narrow it down to what they're drawing. Drawing three, I mean, you could do a little snowing here or there, but it's limit. So there's not a lot of real reason to get tricky because it's not like you're going to stack someone, you know, if you snow them and thinking that you're drawing to a flush and caught it. It's just, it's so straightforward, it's almost like, you know, I didn't have to think.
You know, I totally agree because in the truest sense of mechanical, I agree. I think that it's, you can't find another poker game where it's so rigid and unlikely that you're going to be able to do anything very creative with it. So from that stance,
that's probably a better way of saying
it. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think if you had, say, Mike Carroll on the show,
he would
probably disagree, because if you're playing for real big stakes or something, you could snow people by, you know, taking two, making them think you have three of a kind when you actually only have kings with an ace kicker or something like that. So there is some nuance, but I totally agree. As far as mechanical, it's like, yeah, I mean, obviously we're not thinking too far outside the box here, but the basic mechanics of the show, of the game, yeah, I have to agree. I think a lot of the five-card draws, I mean, even the, except for the no-limit variations, because then you can get crazy, but, you know, if we play a fixed limit deuce to seven, it's triple draw, but if you did it single draw, you know, and made it fixed limit, that would be the same thing. So I agree. I think five-card draw games as a whole are very mechanical.
But even the deuce to seven, you've got a wider variety of hands there. I mean, hey, is my 9-8 good, or do I need to have a 9-7 to win here?
Yeah.
There's all a little more intricacies to it than in five-card draw where, you know, hey, either you got trips or two pair, or you got the lucky where you hit your straight or flush. I mean, there's not a lot of weird things that happen there. I mean, although I did see a guy be dealt a full house on his first five cards, and another guy dealt an ace-high flush in the same hand.
Oof.
And they went crazy. But that's really the only time you see a lot of back-and-forth raising in it. So, I mean, it's essentially one raise pre-flop, and then you draw, and then maybe a check raise or a raise on, you know, after the draw, and boom.
Yeah. Now, it's funny that you brought that up, because I actually found some time to play poker this week as well. And I went into the five-card draw cash game area of PokerStars, and I saw a no-limit game going. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to sit down and play this.
Wow.
Yeah, because really, all you got to do to play that game is really just get, like, three of a kind, and no one will believe you, and then you bet into them, and sure enough, I mean, I like tripled my bankroll in like 15 minutes in that game, and then got out of there. But I loved it. I mean, it was really excellent. You know, you get three of a kind or something, and you raise. I mean, the odds of them. One time I caught three aces, and a guy had three tens, and I took his whole bankroll. And it was just fantastic, you know. And he took three, and I took two. So he made three tens and thought it was good. And I took his whole bankroll. So, yeah, there was nothing mechanical about that. That was pure artistry, baby.
Pure artistry.
But it's weird that we both played five-card draw this week in a certain way, and I never would have normally gone in there, but there was no one playing in the eight-game mix. And then I looked at the other one, and I said, oh, five-card draw, let me look at that. And sure enough, I played no limit. And that can get your heart going, man, if you know, especially since there's five cards involved. It's not like it's there's only two cards that can beat you, you know what I mean? You don't know what they have. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
And I guess that's why it's good that I think I believe our Apes five-card draw will be pot limit, because that's probably the proper way to play it. I mean, no limit's kind of crazy because you can just push with anything. Yeah. Not to say there's not strategies into it. And fixed, like you said, is kind of mechanical. Not that there's not strategy in it, but a pot limit, I think, is probably that's really the game that pot limit is the best in.
Yeah, and if you played at fixed limit, the tournament would end at like 4 in the morning. So
Yeah. Because my tournament did end pretty late, and of course I went out of the bubble.
Oh, of course you did. God.
Chris, this cruise thing. we keep teasing. Things keep happening, but no, we are finally done. I am accepting bookings. Hold on, let me listen to the phone. Oh, I got it on vibrate. So, no, yeah, so I can't hear the massive phones going right now. Calls coming in left and right for the Antiup Cruise. But, yes, we're ready to take your bookings. Go to antiupmagazine.com/cruise. or give me a ring at 727-331-4335, or email me at scott@anyupmagazine.com. Once again, that's October 25th to 29th aboard the Royal Caribbean Monarch of the Seas, leaving out of Port Canaveral in Florida, stopping twice.
Yep.
Once in Nassau.
No.
Nassie.
Nassau.
Nassau. And also Royal Caribbean's private island, Coco Key.
Key. Hey, there you go.
We have not changed the price again. It is $2.99 now per person, double occupancy. That's everything. That's everything except for your tips, which they need. They want the money up front. You know, he hasn't even brought me my first cup of tea. Waiter, now he wants my tips already.
I know. What's up with that?
But yes, give us a ring. And then, of course, we'll remind you that World's Here's a Poker bracelet winner Don Baruch is going to be teaching that great sit-and-go class on there. I imagine we're going to have a lot of good sit-and-goes on this cruise, I'm thinking.
And it's totally free. The class is free, totally included in the price. There's no trickery, no nothing. And this is the guy that won the shootout event, which means he essentially had to win three sit-and-goes against the world's best players, including Dan Negreanu and Eric Lindgren.
Yeah,
to win the bracelet. So, it's a free course from this guy. It's pretty wild.
And, when we announced the cruise, Chris, the hotline rang.
Uh-huh.
I was hoping it was somebody who hasn't called the hotline before, but, you know, those folks are still too scared to call or don't realize that it's free on their cell phone. I was getting ready to say toll-free. It's not. I would have been lying again.
Don't say that.
But no, it's a long-time listener. We always like to hear from the long-time listener, so I'm not dogging that. But our good friend Lauren called, and he had a little funny story about the cruise.
Hey, guys, it's Lauren calling. I was just listening to the show, and you said you were going to Coco Cay, and I realized I've been there. It's this tiny little island that I think is owned by the cruise line, and there's just people wandering around trying to get you to buy a Coco Loco to drink. So if you go, you're going to have to drink a Coco Loco and think of me. Have a great cruise.
Coco Loco.
Okay, well, I've got something to add to this, Chris.
Okay.
You know, because the wife and I have taken this cruise before. The first time that we were on it, she came running over to me by the pool. She's like, "Wow, taste this drink." And it's, it's big, whatever, fruity, creamy kind of thing. And I'm like, "Yeah, it's pretty good." She's like, "It's called a Coco Loco." She's like, "I am having them the rest of the cruise." And she did. She sucked them down left and right, right? So, of course, she gets home, and like most women, when they get home from a cruise, they go to ohmygodyourfatass.com or whatever these websites are where they list like the calorie counts for every possible thing that you can shove in your mouth anywhere in the world, right?
Yeah.
And she looks up, and Coco Loco's on there, and the blood that dripple down from my eardrum from her shrieking will stay with me forever. She didn't even get to finish telling me the calorie count before she ran straight to the treadmill and stayed there the rest of the day. I believe the calorie count for a Coco Loco was in the five digits, no decimal points. So while these drinks are amazing,
there's no way. Five digits?
Oh, come on. Give me some artistic licenses.
Okay.
But they are amazing.
But it was high.
Amazing how many calories they pack into this little Coco Loco thing.
See,
but,
that's my downfall is I tend to believe you because you're my partner in business. I don't. Maybe I should start seeing the paperwork from now on from the business. Start sending me copies of everything. I believe you way too often, man. Your sarcasm's just dripping. Hey, but is that on the same level as a dirty banana?
They're very similar, yes. Yes.
Okay.
I think that's the same thing. They just, I think they call it the Coco Loco because you're in Coco Key.
Yeah.
And not a dirty banana because you're not in Banana Key.
Okay. All right.
But, yeah, same drink, I think.
Well, I'm looking forward to the cruise and everyone using my sanded chips. Hey, did I ever tell you how I sanded those chips?
No, please. Please tell us.
Do you have a half an hour?
No, wait, hold on. Wait until Chris Rose is on the show later on and tell him because I'm sure he's going to love that
story.
Oh,
my God.
Maybe he'll work it into the future big game broadcast.
All right. Well, we do have an Apes event, speaking of bananas, coming up Saturday at noon Eastern time. No Limit Hold'em, the garden variety. And then we also have a free roll at 9 p.m. on July 7th, and that's for the No Limit Hold'em rebuy event. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Hey, I'm not really sure what I think that rebuy event's only a buck, so you know, don't get too excited about that free roll. But you know, hey, it's practice, right?
That's right. You get to play for free, have some fun, and you know, visit PokerStars.com. So what more could you ask for?
But I tell you, that July 4th rebuy event is always a highlight of the Ape schedule.
Yeah.
You know, with people going crazy. So definitely mark the calendar for July 14th if you can't make the July 7th free roll.
Yeah, I can't make the free roll. I'll be in Las Vegas, which I guess we should let everybody know. I'm going to be at the World Series for the main event days 1 through, I guess, just A through D, and I fly home on the 9th. So July 4th to the 9th, I'll be at the World Series.
We should probably let them know that you're not playing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just covering it for the magazine and begging very popular people to give me their phone number so I can call them during the year for the magazine and the show. So,
and they go, hey, let me tell you about this chip standing I did.
Speaking of the World Series, let's get to the Antiup News Desk.
Yes, our Antiup News Desk today, Chris. Three items, three major tournament news items.
Yeah, three major tours.
Kind of getting this crazy theme thing going on. I'll have to break out of it next week. All right, we'll start off with Phil Ivey, widely regarded as the best poker player playing the game today. Won his 8th World Series of Poker bracelet this week in event number 37. That was horse. The $320,000 payday gives Ivey more than $13 million in career tournament earnings, and he's the youngest player ever to reach 8 bracelets.
Now, the real question is, will Howard Lederer beg off this bet now and try to get a buyout?
I think there were some bank accounts being transferred over to Switzerland or something once Ivey got to this final table.
Yeah, because this, I mean, all he's got to do is win one over the next, 2 years, and he wins his $5 million bet or something. I mean, oh, man, I think that letter is going to be begging him to take it. Okay, the North American Poker Tour will go to the Bicycle Casino, otherwise known as the Bike, near Los Angeles for its next stop, November 12th to the 17th, Poker News Daily reports. Future tournaments on the NAPT have yet to be announced, but we think we might have them coming close to us sometime soon.
Yeah, the rumors, there have been heavy rumors that it might come to Mississippi at some point. And, of course, I know they're eager to come down here to Florida, too, so we'd love to see them. I would love to be at an NAPT event. You know, so many people come over these things.
Oh, yeah, and of course, it's PokerStars, so you know it's done right. I like it. It's have you ever watched it on TV?
Just a little bit, not much.
Yeah, it's pretty good on TV, too. So it's a different format with the stuff they show on television, but looking forward to
Krupa,
it.
Joanna Krupa, right?
Yeah, Joanna Krupa is the host or whatever. And, you know, and of course, they get Lon and Norman and everything. But I liked it, and I hope they do more for the television because it's good to watch.
And finally, celebrity tournament director Matt Savage has been hired as executive tour director of the World Poker Tour, Card Player reports. Savage has presided over more than 300 televised tournaments.
You know, I just don't know how he does it. I mean, and the other thing, too, it's like, you know, okay, I'm officially the tournament guy at the Commerce, but I'm also doing these World Poker Tour direct. I mean, how does he do it? I don't know how he does it. And you know, all this, you know, co-mingling of companies and casinos, and I don't know, he keeps track of it all. He must have like 100 different paychecks come to his house every week.
Yeah, it's probably easy for a couple of them to be missed too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He probably has somebody on his payroll that's just paycheck checker.
Oh, man. Endorse one of those babies to me.
Well, Chris, the hotline is not ringing today.
No, because everybody's calling the cruise line. That's why.
Well, that could be why. You know, but I did check the batteries in the hotline, and you know, they're fresh, brand new double A's in there. So you know, don't be scared. Call us at 813-448-1120. And remember, I put that darn number on the website now so people can find it. And no one's even misdialed. We haven't even that crazy Spanish speaking lady call that always leaves messages that I never know what she's talking about.
We haven't been able to win a Ford Explorer in a long time either. I don't know what's up with that. Maybe the hotline's just not working.
Yeah, no, that's why I said I checked the batteries.
I know, but I just, maybe, you know, maybe your checker
is. Lauren got through. There's no password. There's no, hey, you know, it's not like the Steve Martin Saturday Night Live hosting club. You know, we have to have a card to get through.
Oh,
anybody
man.
Can call it. All you need is a phone.
All right, well, if you don't have a phone, you must have email because you must be listening to us on a computer. So you could always mailbag us. You can always send us something.
Mailbag us. I like the verb.
Yeah, mailbag us. Like Frank Leger did from Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. You want me to read it?
Yeah, go ahead. And I kind of edited it down. His actual email was quite funny, but you know, we like to keep the show deathly serious. So I edited it down. But no, actually, I edited it down for another reason. But it's down to the essence. So you go right ahead. I got a ready answer.
Okay, here we go. In a $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em game, I check the paired board on the river, and my opponent bets $80. I look at him and say, "If you have trips, it's yours," and throw my pocket aces face up in front of me. He calls for the floor because he says that I didn't say call, and no chips crossed the line. My cards were not close to the muck, and I did not say fold. Before he called for the floor, I did say call 20 seconds after I threw my cards down. Was my play acceptable?
Well, here's the thing. As soon as I got it, I shot an email off to our good friend Sam Mantello. You know, he's the director of poker ops over at Sarasota Kennel Club, and you know, he's done all kinds of great tournaments. Always gets back to me real quick. And his response was very quick and, as usual, very funny. From Sam, he says, "The hand is live. However, I will tell the guy with the aces, if he does it again, that he'll have to rack his chips and leave for the day."
Huh. Wow.
Shocked.
I like that.
Well, you know, I guess I had to think about this for a while. I would have said that, you know, the hand wasn't mucked, right? It didn't touch the muck.
Right.
It was face up. Obviously, he didn't say call or the chips, so I understand the other guy wanting to know what the heck is going on. So, you know, I guess I'm not surprised that Sam said the hand is live, but obviously he wouldn't have much tolerance for folks that don't want to say call or push the chips or do the other kind of things that make this otherwise easy process very easy.
So I guess Sam's contention here then is that the guy sort of slowed the game down and then was kind of angle shooting. But
yeah,
I mean, are you allowed to shoot your cards in his poker room in a cash game?
Here's what I wrote to Frank, you know, even after Sam wrote, is that, you know, that whole showing cards thing is one of these rules that is very different from every poker room you go to. Doesn't seem like there's any real standard. And some poker rooms I know have a different standard for showing your cards in a cash game and a tournament. So it's one of those things that I don't think people should get in the habit of doing. And it's just easier just to say, call, fold. You know, just say what you want to do, you know?
Yeah.
We're not on a Hollywood soundstage. There's no need for this flair for the dramatic.
I mean, there is an argument to be said that the guy is looking for a reaction from the guy, which, you know, you pick up the Bible of Poker Super System, and there's a chapter in there where Doyle says, you know, sometimes I'll show him my cards, and then it gets back to people. I judge his reaction before I'm going to call or fold. So it's you know, I mean, if this guy's showing his aces and saying something because he wants to see how this guy reacts to seeing pocket aces, then he might make his decision on whether or not he wants to call or not. If it didn't hit the muck and he's allowed to show his cards, I don't know. I don't know if that's a problem or not for me, but...
Well, I you know, again, a lot of these questions, I think, were probably missing some nuance, either both in my editing down and also just not being at the table and kind of seeing the facial things going on.
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine there would be a dealer out there that would just stay there until the guy either said, "I call," or "I fold," you know. In other words, you know, the dealer does not want to, like, push the action here. The cards were flipped face up. And as long as that's allowed in that room, there's no reason to mock it,
right,
you know.
Right.
Eventually somebody's going to say, "Hey, did he call? What's going on here?" And at that point, the dealer would say, "Hey, are you calling or folding?"
Right.
So, you know, in a lot of ways, I think it's a non-issue. But obviously something happened here where his opponent felt the need to clarify what happened, and that's where it became contentious.
Wow. I didn't think we'd be able to talk about it this long, but we have. It's interesting. Very interesting.
We have an amazing ability to overtalk any situation. All right, well, real quickly though, it also inspired us to start a new column in the magazine, Chris.
Yeah.
Tentatively called Call the Floor. And we're going to have our great Annie Up Poker Tour poker directors, and they do more than just run their poker room on the cruise ship. They actually are out living and working in poker rooms now and have been the top dogs before. And they are going to answer our questions from our readers. And I already started by sending them this one and some other ones cold from the forum. And that will be in the August issue. And we started a new thread on our forum at antiantmagazine.com for folks to actually post questions there. We already have one in there.
Yes, very good.
Yeah, so if you come across these things, and not just things in casinos, we're including home game stuff that are a little weird and stuff too. So, you know, we've always had a lot of people posting stuff in the forum about that, but now we're going to try to get you answers in a more regular fashion. So check that out.
What's going on with the swag shelf, though? I'm trying to figure out what we're going to give away here.
Yeah, you're probably doing the little addition there. You probably took your shoes off and stuff and, you know, carried the one. Yeah, we don't have a hotline this week. And our hand of the week is an interesting hand from a swag ineligible person, somebody that's already got a swag, right?
Yeah.
So Frank, because you took the opportunity to email us that no one else did, we're going to give you your choice of swag.
Wow.
Any one of the three things that we normally give away on the show, Frank, you pick which one you want, and that is what we're going to send you. So your choice is that great $10 Get a Steak staking package from GetAsteak.com, or that free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, that hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from Element26.net, or the ever-popular uncut sheet of J-Design playing cards. And this will be the last one. We're going back to setups for the next one. So you have your choice of those, Frank. Let us know, and we'll send it out. And everybody else, you know, hey, if you want to be afforded these great opportunities to choose your own swag, got to send us something.
Now, if he doesn't choose the J-Design uncut sheet, will that roll over into next week, or are we going to just eliminate it?
Interesting. I will have to check the bylaws of the swag show and see how we would handle such a situation.
All right.
Definitely email your stuff to podcast@antiantmagazine.com and help us avoid these difficult decisions, like what to do with rollover swag.
Well, you know, our good detective sent us in a mystery from the World Series last week, the case of the train derailment. In case any of you forgot how part one went, here it is.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, the case of the train derailment. We're in a 100-player WSOP Super Satellite with prizes front-loaded to the top two finishers. We're reaching the final stages of the tournament now, and with 19 left, we're playing on three tables. The level is 200, 400, and the ante is 50. I think the average stack size is around 14K, which would be an M of around 14, and I have a stack size around 19K.
No need to rush, sir.
The end of the gun folds, and I look down at Queen of Spades, Queen of Diamonds. I raise it up to 999, and the next two players fold. The small blind, however, shoves all in for 7,600, and the big blind calls for 3,300. The pot is 11,383, and I immediately click the time button. Wow. While I'm thinking about this, another player busts, and we are going to move to two tables of nine on the next hand.
I am not feeling too good.
So what do you think? Call or fold?
All right, Chris, I'm a little, you know, again, you know, I get accused of being this rosy-eyed little kid that's always excited about everything.
Yes.
And I think I'm that in that situation again here where I really kind of like this mystery. I think it's kind of cool. And everybody on the forum was, easy call. It was like, it's boring. And my guess is you're probably going to say that too. But I think it's interesting, and I think there's a lot to think about here. So I started with wondering what the small blind would overshove with here. It's a pretty big raise, right?
Yeah.
And so to me, it's hard to imagine there'd be ace, ace, king, king, or ace, king. So at worst, I think we're in a coin flip with ace, king. And the big blind could have anything, but I don't really care about him so much because if I call and beat the small blind, I'm going to make 4,300 chips on this hand. And the big blind likely could have some of those out cards to help us what we think the small blind has. Might have another ace or something like that, right?
Right.
So then you factor in the fact that we're going down to two tables. The blinds are going to slow down for a bit. I think I am ready to gamble with a little more than 40% of my stack here, especially, and this is key, very especially, because we have to finish in the top two to get anything out of this. I have no idea why he's stuck on playing these crazy tournaments. That's the real mystery here. Why are we entering tournaments where only two people get paid?
I think you said that last week. So
I know. He's going to keep doing this.
Oh, man.
My friends play two-player winner tournaments. That's going to be the new t-shirt.
Oh, my God. Well, I have to agree. I really think that we need to call here. There's not, again, there are only two hands that beat us, and it really doesn't feel like that's what these hands are. And if we're wrong, all right, so we're, I guess we're less than average, but still, there's still plenty of time. Like you said, we're going to two tables and we're slowing down, and you could double up on the next hand. So really, I mean, I just can't see myself folding here. You know, you can knock out, what, is it two players you can knock out, if I recall correctly? Or is it one?
Oh, yeah, no, we have the other guy covered.
Yeah, so, yeah, so I mean, you can knock people out, you can get a lot of chips, which is going to be important to cash in this two-player payout system. So I just can't see myself folding. I'm just not that good to fold queen-queen here. And,
and there's the other thing, too. This is an entirely different mystery, in my opinion, if the big blind's not involved in this.
Yeah.
Because the big blind gives us a lot of extra chips there, and like I said, takes away those out cards. So if it's just a small blind shoving, the big blind folds, then I think this is a much tougher decision. I probably still might call, but I think that big blind in there makes this a different mystery. So
yeah,
but what do I know?
And you're definitely ahead of at least one person here, and they're maybe both. You know, and it feels like I'm ahead of both, but I really don't know. And I just like I said, I'm not good enough to fold queen queen in this situation here with. I need chips, and I need to do it at the final two tables, so I'm calling. And you said the forum was pretty unanimous on that, too, on a call, right?
You could take the board pretty off of there.
Oh, okay.
100%.
Okay. All right.
not a lot of discussion here. I think there's a lot of head-scratching on why this is a mystery. So I'm going to challenge Columbo to explain to us why it was a mystery next time and explain to us what the heck he's doing. I'm not going to stake him. No more staking at Columbo. He's got to play these crazy tournaments.
We're going to start a website, donotgetastake.com.
Yes.
And he's going to be the first name on the list. Okay, let's hear part two.
Welcome back. Well, when it gets towards the end of an MTT, I like to be more conservative with my calls. I am in no desperate straits with 19K in chips, and I was the chip leader at my short table. I could easily be against ace-ace or king-king here, but I could also be against two hands like ace-king, ace-queen, or more likely ace-king, 10-10.
That is a big decision.
Even if I get it in as a favorite, I would be risking half my stack at an estimated 45% versus an expected ace-king in a lower pair, and that just does not seem prudent this late in a tournament. For those of you obsessed with price, it's, what, $7,600 to win 19K, which is 2.5 to 1, but let me rail a minute on pot odds in tournaments versus cash games. I have $999 invested in a hand, not $7,600, in which I am less than 50% to win. So I don't feel this is a good place to use pot odds to call where I'm at less than 50%. I can drop the $999 knowing that I still have 18K in chips, and tournaments are as much about survival as they are chip accumulation, and I have an above-average stack here. So, I fold. The opponent's table 6-6 and ace-king suited, telling us we were almost exactly 45% to win the hand. The ace is the second card on the flop, and ace-king takes down a big pot. And more importantly, we survive elimination. But then again, I went on to finish 5th, not 1st. Until next time, this is Columbo telling you to, well, pick your poison.
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Joining the Ante Up Nation today is Chris Rose, who many of you have seen hosting a variety of poker shows. Most recently, PokerStars is the big game on Fox. Chris, thanks for taking the time to chat with us today.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. How you doing, all right?
Yeah, we're doing great. You know, we're going over your resume, you know, preparing for the interview, and I have to ask, when do you actually find time to use the restroom?
It's usually during breaks when we're taping the big game. That's about the only... Actually, I'm thinking of attaching a colostomy bag. it's been a little busy, but it's great work, and as long as my bosses aren't listening, I will admit that I have the best job going, in TV.
Yeah, let's hope they're not answering or listening, because we want you to get that raise coming up. You richly deserve it. Now, you've done a lot more than poker. You obviously do a lot of baseball and football. How does commentating on poker differ from the sports commentating that you do, Chris?
Well, obviously, listen, as all of your listeners would know, poker, it's not a live event. I mean, we did a few of them on FSN, and I think we realized that it just doesn't have the drama as when you're doing edited down versions of the game. We don't ever try and fake the fact that this is taped. So obviously it's tedious work in the sense that the guys at the table, whether it's Daniel or Phil Hellmuth or Phil Locke or Tony G, Doyle Brunson, any of those guys can shine at any time. They are the superstars. You want them to be heard above you. So the key is kind of dancing around the little conversations and the quips that they'll say while at the table. So in that sense, it's a trying, what we call in television, a voiceover session. Whereas when you're doing baseball or football, it's happening right in front of you. There are no, constraints in terms of trying to hear certain guys talk. I mean, you're kind of driving the action along with what's happening on the field. So I think that's the biggest difference.
Now, you've done so many different poker shows. Have you caught the bug? How often do you get a chance to play?
Well, I'm the father of two young boys. So once I put them down to bed, I will occasionally dabble. I'll hop onto Poker Stars and do my thing. I'm not going to give you my screen name because I am not good. I want my kids to go to college. I want to keep that money. I don't want you guys taking it all. But I'm actually driving with my 9-year-old right now. You come out and you've seen me play poker, right, buddy? You can say something. Yeah. Do I stink at poker? Yeah, he says I'm so-so. But then again, he's 9, and so he thinks I'm as good as Daniel. I've got him fooled.
All right, Chris, the easy answer here is the big game, but what is your favorite poker show to host and why?
Well, listen, the two I've done most recently have been great. The big game, this is actually the first experience I've had at calling a cash game, which is, as you guys well know, is so different from tournament poker. But, I really enjoyed that. And I love the idea of the loose cannon. I love an amateur getting chance to be staked $100,000 and perhaps change the way they live their life. I think that's really cool. And that's why I love doing, PokerStars.net Million Dollar Challenge. You know, some of the poker world scoff at it, and I get that because they see it as it's a gimmicky little game show. But once again, we don't represent it as anything other than what it is, which is, I mean, it is a game show. It's a totally different sort of vibe. And last year we had a guy who was a 9/11 hero, whose job it was for a quarter of a century to serve and protect our, you know, the people in New York City and our country. And here he is, and he wins $1 million. I mean, how can you not feel good about that? Yeah. I mean, literally, that changed somebody's life.
Yeah. Hey, you've talked about a lot of the celebrities, you know, that are in these games and stuff like that. And you've been paired with a lot of these big name pros and celebrities and stuff. Are any of those people stand out in your mind as the most fun to work with, that kind of thing?
Well, first and foremost, Howard Lederer, I owe him everything. When I first started in the poker side of the business in 2004, my boss approached me and he said, listen, we're getting more and more into the poker game. We think you'd be good at it. And I told my boss, George Greenberg, I said, George, I'll be honest with you. I've never played a hand of poker in my life.
Wow.
You know? To me, a full house was that show on TV. I didn't know what was going on. Howard would sit up with me at night and go over the game and go over the strategy. And, you know, for that, I'll forever be indebted to him. His patience. I mean, I could never imagine, let's say, Reggie Jackson sitting with somebody late into the night trying to work on their power stroke from the left-hand side of the batter's box. I could be wrong, but I just don't see Reggie doing that. For Howard to do that, that will stay with me forever, and that's why I'm so appreciative of him. The guy I'm working with right now, Joe Stapleton, is great. It's his first shot at calling poker on TV. He's doing a great job. He's very, very funny and clever. But at the same time, you know, he's handling the business of calling the game and analyzing it the way it should be done so that it's not just a joke fest the whole time. I think he really has balanced it well.
Well, obviously, all that time you spent with Howard Lederer was well appreciated. How much has being a commentator for these shows actually helped your poker game? I know your son says you're so-so, but do you have the potential of getting better by watching all this poker?
I thought so until last night. then it was a struggle. Yes, I have gotten better. I have kept some things in mind. But at the same time, as you guys well know, when you play online, which I don't have time to go play live. I just unfortunately don't. So when I play online, some jokers are calling with some serious junk. And now I know why Phil Hellmuth goes cuckoo. I'm like, you stuck around with that? Oh, listen, I get it. I understand it. It hurts. It hurts when somebody's calling me with like Ken Trey off suit. You know, after I make a sizable bet. You know, I'm whatever. But. It's my fault. It's not theirs. I should be looking at my own problem. You know, like I said, I enjoy it a lot. I don't go crazy with it because I just don't trust myself.
Well, you know, you mentioned that you don't play online, or you don't play live, but you play online. And one of our listeners, Own the Dream, that's his name, he wants to know why you haven't signed with one of their online poker rooms and played in the main event, the World Series.
Well, it's a good question. My guess is that once they saw my poker skills, that they would figure it would be the worst $10,000 they ever spent in their lives. I can only guess it would be from their perspective. But also, I got to be honest with you, it's a time question with me. I mean, basically, we're banging out these shows. We're voicing over 3 to 4 days a week. Then on Friday, I'll go to my baseball game, fly out wherever it is in the country, do the game Saturday, and either come home Saturday night and or Sunday morning. And like I said, I do have a family, and as long as I don't want to be seeing one of the high-priced divorce attorneys come my way anytime soon, I think it might be best if I set this one out, but it is a good question.
Well, another one of our listeners, he goes by the name Crackpot1, wants to know whether you feel the need to be a poker expert in order to be a poker commentator.
I love it. Crackpot One. We actually have a name for it. It's called Fox Television Executive. do you have to be an expert? No. Do you have to have a good knowledge of what's going on? I mean, my job is to call the play-by-play. So right. As long as I'm calling all the right bets, raises, re-raises, what's out there on the board, that's my job. The analyst has to know what they're talking about. Now, there's going to be certain people who say, oh, I don't know, why did that guy say that comment? That doesn't make sense. Well, let's remember that there's no one way to play every poker hand. There's different ways. I mean, it's just like there's different ways to coach a football team. So two Hall of Fame coaches might see a play develop totally different ways. So just because the philosophy of the poker quote-unquote expert doesn't match the way you're thinking or doesn't match the way Daniel Negreanu or Barry Greenstein or Doyle Brunson or Phil Hellmuth is thinking doesn't mean that it's necessarily the wrong way.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So what's the craziest thing you've seen on these shows? I mean, you've been around some pretty wacky shows and some wacky moments. Is there something that stands out in your mind?
Well, the first week of the big game, I thought that Phil Hellmuth was A, either going to punch Tony G in the face, or B, start crying. And, I mean, listen, it's one thing to lose chips in a tournament, and it's another thing. I mean, as we all know, Phil Hellmuth is not an expert cash game player. I mean, it's not his forte. Yeah. The guy's got 11 World Series of Poker bracelets for a reason. He's arguably the best tournament player we've ever seen. But when it comes to cash games, it's a different story. And Tony G, in the middle of the week, just started crushing him. Just crushing him, saying, Phil, I can't believe you're playing those hands. It's an embarrassment. You're a professional. You're a professional. And Phil's sitting there. You know, he looks like a sixth grader curled up into his chair. And he's going, Tony, just shut up. You're not even in this hand. Shut up, Tony. And those guys were just going back and forth, and it was a thing of beauty.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, that sort of stuff is what really sticks out in my brain. And also, just from, a personal standpoint, I don't know if you guys remember the shows Learn from the Pros.
Yeah.
Yes.
They were basically half-hour educational tutorials in which I hosted with Howard, and one segment of the show was always to have a roundtable discussion with the best poker players around. I mean, everybody was there. Daniel was there. Phil Ivey was there. Eric Lindgren was there. Mattisau was there. You're talking about the best, the brightest personalities, Chris Ferguson. I mean, it would be like getting Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Ernie Els, Padraig Harrington together and having him discuss different tips on how to better your golf game.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a great experience, not only for our viewers, but for me as well, just to kind of sit down with these guys. It was terrific.
Now, when you took your very first broadcasting job, way back when, did you ever imagine that you would someday be interviewing a priest on a poker show like the Million Dollar Challenge?
Oh, yeah, of course. I would have figured that. I was disappointed that weeks 2 and 3 we didn't have a rabbi and the Dalai Lama. So that's what we're going to try and work into season 2 when it comes back this fall. We want to cover the whole religious gamut if we can. Listen, when Mark Mayer, the executive producer of that show, called me and he said, Rosie, we found a priest. And I said, Mayor, I said, Mark, you and I are both Jewish. We don't need one. What are you talking about? No, we found one for the show. I was like, you got to be kidding me, right? And sure enough, he wasn't. And Father Trapp was a terrific guy, decent poker player. And I was really happy that he won something for his church because he was trying to rebuild his church down there in South Carolina, and I thought it was great that he was able to do that. Pretty cool.
All right, well, let's get into the big game here. Now, you know, every poker show has its hook, and you mentioned this loose cannon player who is staked by stars. How intimidated, if at all, are most of these loose cannons when sitting down with the biggest stars in the game?
Well, it's interesting. The first week, if you guys watched, Ernest Wiggins was intimidated. He got huge hands early on and did virtually nothing with them. You know, listen, that's a guy that's played only 4 years. My guess is he hasn't played a ton of live action. You can understand somebody's nerves, not only sitting down with these, I mean, it's literally like poker ghosts coming down to join you at a table. So you can understand the nerves of that. Throw on top of it, probably never being in a television setting before, it can be difficult. It's really a challenge. So that happened. This week's loose cannon, a guy named Will Davis, a guy who's an aspiring pro, looks very comfortable at the table for the most part, has played fairly well to this point. Next week's loose cannon, you guys are going to want to tune in. She looks like, and we refer to her this way, as the Russian KGB agent in all the Bond movies. I mean, she's
awesome.
Wow.
And she's really a good poker player, too. And it also, next week, has my favorite moment in the show so far. It's unreal. Because, well, I'm not going to tell you who, but one of the pros gets caught staring into her eyes.
Oh, my God. That
is
good.
You know, you were talking about the greatest moment. That, now that I'm thinking about it, that one might be it, because it is as uncomfortable yet watchable a moment as I've ever seen in poker TV history. It is a thing of beauty.
All right, Chris. Well, you know, I've got my partner here, Chris, and he's tends to go off on tangents too. So I know how frustrating this can be. But on one of these episodes, Joe, your co-host, went off on a Star Wars tangent, actually trying to imitate Chewbacca, and you were just silent. How uncomfortable was that for you?
He did the Star Wars reference. That was me doing the Chewbacca.
Oh no.
Then how uncomfortable was he? Then maybe it should be the question.
Yeah, is Joe Stapleton on hold? You can ask him. Yeah, you know, listen, we try to have our fun too. You got to pick your spots when you're doing 80 of these shows. You know, you don't want everyone to sound the same. So, you know, listen, it was fun. It was fun for me. Next week I'll bust out with my Obi-Wan Kenobi. And, you know, maybe I'll wear some cool little earmuffs into the booth and Joe can dress up as Princess Leia. Who knows?
Be sure to stop at the mall and get those Cinnabons so you can put them on your ears.
I know, exactly.
Hey, you know, Scott and I have been doing some on-air commentating for some local poker TV shows, and we plan to do a few more in the future. Other than going for your job, do you have any advice for us?
Yeah, get lucky, because that's what I did. It obviously has very little to do with talent and everything to do with luck and timing. Listen, just have fun. I think if you're having fun and not, it's real easy to poke fun at these guys in terms of why they do that, why they do this. And I think over the years, I've probably learned to kind of cut back on that sort of situation because, you know, it's their dough in front of them. They're the ones that brought $100,000 to the table, and so it's a lot harder to make decisions when it's there and when they don't know what the other guy has like we do.
Right.
So I think we just have to kind of keep that in mind when you're yelling at the TV, oh, why'd you make that move? Well, you know, we have the great ability of having every card in front of us, you know, old card cams and all the community cards. So, you know, you probably are thinking, well, I would have known that by watching this, that, the other thing. Well, sometimes you don't. And so to give these guys the benefit of the doubt is probably what we've learned.
All right, Chris. Well, we appreciate you joining us today. We know you're busy. Once again, it's thepokerstars.net, the big game. It's on Fox. Check your local listings for that. And, Chris, hopefully the next time we have you on the show, you'll be slightly better than a so-so player. So maybe you need to have your son kind of set out some goals for you.
Yeah, I wouldn't bank on it, guys. But thanks for the rah-rah speech anyway.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate your time.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
This week's Hand of the Week, Pot Limit Omaha, Chris.
Hey, we haven't had one of those in a while. I can't remember the last time we had a PLO game.
Yeah, you know, and I was going to call Gambit, you know, because that's his game, right?
Yeah.
He lives and breathes for Gambit. But he's, you know, he's off on vacation. He took, like, that little auto train thing. Have you ever heard of that?
Is that the one where you take your car with you?
Yeah, you pull your car under the train and then you pull off there. It's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know what it costs and stuff. But, you know, that's a great family trip.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It sucks for us, though, because he's not here to help us with this.
I know.
So I guess we've got to muddle through it ourselves. I mean, I could do the PLO 8, but PLO, I'm, you know.
I'll do my best.
So.
I'll do my best.
All right, comes from another longtime listener, Chris Drake, all the way from the great state of Ohio. Go Bucks. And he's playing, this is the Pot Limit Omaha rotation in a $2 eight-game mixed tournament on Stars, all right?
Wow, big spenders.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, I put $4 down last night, so not everybody can swing the money around like I do. all right, the blinds are at 30-60. Of course, this is six-handed because it's the eight-game mix.
Right.
Stacks range from 900 to 6,000, and our hero Chris here has the second biggest stack at the table with 45-66. The villain in the hand is covered by us with 3,757.
Wow. Well, we have, what, 900 big blinds? We're doing all right.
It's a lot of big blinds. All right. He said, our hero says he had won some hands in Raz, Stud, and Stud 8 rounds. It actually built up quite well in those rotations, betting all his good hands and getting there. And he said he notices this a lot, Chris, in these eight-game mix. When the game changes to no limit, people get crazy and uber-aggressive.
Yeah.
All right?
Yep.
So after folding a round of hands, he says he picks up a mediocre hand in the big blind. He says the player on his left, who liked to push all in a no-limit hand, potted it, and it folded back to us. And we decided we were going to defend our big blind.
What's the hand he has?
All right. So, again, it's 30-60. The villain pots it to 210. We have ace of hearts, jack of diamonds, queen of spades, two of spades.
Okay. I know every week I almost always joke around and say, fold, right? Because that's what you should do. And then, it wouldn't be a hand of the week if we folded. So I'm going to say something this week.
I hope you say more than something.
And it's going to be fold. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I have to say it again. Listen to me when I tell you this. Pot Limit Omaha is 100% a game of position and nuts, neither which you have. Okay? In this hand, ace of hearts can't make the nut anything except Broadway. And how many times does a straight win? And queen of spades, deuce of spades can't make the nuts anything unless the ace of spades and the king of spades come out. And you're totally out of position. And this is from a guy under the gun who raised, who generally, when they do that, generally will have aces in their hands, kings in their hands, or something of that variation, like ace-ace, jack-10, ace-king, jack-10. So you're probably crushed as well here. I just can't get involved in this hand. So that's the lesson from the hand already. Just when you're in Pot Limit Omaha, position is everything. And if it's not position, you better have nut draws. And really, you only have one that's mediocre. So that's the lesson of the hand. I'll take it further after this, obviously. But really, playing Pot Limit Omaha, Jeff Wang's book is fantastic. Read that book. He'll tell you why position is so important in this game, unlike even Hold'em, for that matter. So really, I would just fold. Sorry I went on that tangent there, but I would fold this hand immediately.
Are you going to purr like Chewbacca now?
Oh!
I can't disagree with anything that you said other than I do think that straights do win in this game more often than maybe you give credit for.
Okay.
And we do have some straight possibilities here. As you said, only one is the nuts of the Broadway. I'm not sure I'm excited about making my straight with Ace Deuce.
Yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
But other than that, I agree, but I guess here's the thing, and our villain totally admits that this was a bad call already. We haven't gotten to the hand yet.
Okay, good.
But he feels like he's getting slapped around, Chris.
Yeah, but he's in the blind. I mean,
the people that are playing, suspect cards and playing them big. At what point do you say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not taking it anymore?
Okay, well, I understand that, and I can tell this guy's on his left, so he's probably getting frustrated when they're in the blinds together, but this guy now is under the gun, and you're in the big blind. Right. I mean, of course, it's not a full ring game or anything. It's six-handed, so there's a little suspectness, I guess is the word I'm looking for, that could be out of this guy's raise, but still, I can't see myself getting too involved. How about that? But calling right. a pot, I guess you could afford it, but... I don't want to get too involved. Can I get away from this hand?
Yeah,
then,
yeah. I'm not advocating necessarily calling here either, but as you mentioned, we have a crap load of chips here.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And, maybe I'll call. I don't want to get in the habit of calling it off every time, but maybe this is my stand where I'm like, you know what? I'll put the extra 150 clams in here, and, if I get that miracle flop, then, yeah, I'll teach this little kid a lesson.
Just know, though, that kind of thinking can escalate to your entire stack in
Absolutely.
That one hand. Just
Absolutely.
Keep that in the back of our minds.
And as we advocate in our Poker 101 classes, you have to have a plan going into the hand.
Yeah.
And you can adjust based on new information, but you really should stick to that plan. So our plan here is to flop big or go home, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If we're going to call.
Right.
All right, here comes the 450 in the pot. The flop is the ace of spades, five of spades, nine of hearts. So we got top pair for whatever that matters in Omaha. And the second nut flush draw. And we admit that we do not have a stellar hand. He does not admit that he also missed what our plan was, but I'm sure he knows. So I'm sure we are not shocked that we check here.
No, I can't fault a check. If you think about the types of hands that are raising, they could be aces. He could have a set. It could be the case ace, which is unlikely, but it could be the case ace. And even so... someone could be raising with like ace, king, jack, 10, and the king of spades is in their hand. So your flush could be beat as well if you get there. So I would be cautious, and I agree with the check. I think a bet would only, make us have to put out money that needlessly at the point you don't know what he's willing to bet. So I'm going to check.
All right. So that's what we do. Our villain bets 360 into the 450 pot, making it 810.
Okay. I guess I might call and peel one off. I know.
Really?
Yeah,
you're shocking me here.
I wouldn't raise. Well, because, again, it's not a lot of money. And to be fair, if I really was analyzing this.
You're going against your plan now.
I know. But what I'm saying is.
No one's ever going to listen to us for strategy advice ever again.
I think we did flop pretty decent here, though. I think we did flop pretty decent. We do have top pair with second kicker. Which means that we could improve to two pair that might be good here. If we, the only thing we're really behind is a set here and ace king. So, and we do have the second nut flush draw. Just be cautious. But I mean, to be honest, I think a real bet here would have been pot, and he didn't bet pot. And I'm not saying that you're supposed to bet pot, but in all my readings of Pot Limit Omaha, if somebody doesn't bet pot. It's weak, and they almost always don't have the hand. And I would even consider even check raising here and trying to push this guy off his hand. But that's just me being aggressive, and probably in a cash game I'd probably do that. I think I would call here and just see what comes on the turn and then make my adjustment.
Wow, very interesting. It's not often that you shock me.
Oh, come on.
Well, okay, all right. So I lie. I lie to you all the time.
I know, dude.
All right. Well, our hero does make the call. He said mostly hoping to hit the flush draw, but also maybe to slow this guy down a little bit. He says, I'm tired of the aggression. I hear you, man. I hear you. Pot is now 1170. The turn card is the eight of diamonds. So our board now is the ace of spades, five of spades, nine of hearts, eight of diamonds.
All right, well, we've picked up a gut shot now, right? Because we have jack queen, so we could hit a 10. So now we could hit a 10, probably a spade, and maybe even one of our other cards to make a two pair. But I'm not betting. I think if I'm betting and the guy bets enough, I'm folding. But if he doesn't bet pot, you know, I just don't think that he's got a hand. So anyway, I'm checking.
All right. I briefly contemplated whether you should put a blocking bet in here to kind of slow him down. I think it'd be hard to kind of sell that though, unless you had pocket, you know, unless you put you on a pocket eights or the 6-7, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I guess maybe a blocking bet just kind of keeps the pot smaller if he actually just goes along and calls. But you know what? I guess the more I think about it right now, right on the fly, I would rather do that and see if this guy's going to raise me than I am to give him the freedom to decide how much to bet.
Hmm. All right.
And I don't know what that blocking bet would be. Maybe something like 300 or something.
Yeah, see, that's just, to me, I think if I'm playing in this tournament and I have position on you and you bet 300 there, I'm potting it. That's weak to me. I don't think you have anything if you're betting there.
To be potting, I mean, you'd be committing yourself to this hand then.
I think if I'm the other guy is what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. He started the hand with 37.57.
Yeah, I think
already has, you know, 600, 13, yeah, you know.
You don't have 6-7 betting 360 there or whatever it was you're going to say. There's no way you have 6-7 and betting that amount because you want to protect against the flush. So you've already told me that your hand is weak. You don't have a straight. If you had a straight, you would bet pot there. So what could you possibly have? And if I show the aggression first and I have three aces, I'm committed to this hand. There's no way you have me beat if I have three aces. So I don't know what this guy has. Generally, you'd have three aces in this spot, but he could have a draw too and just as being a bully. But if I'm the other guy and you did that to me, I'm probably potting it if I have a decent hand.
I guess that's what I'm saying. So we're probing here. If the guy just calls, it's great because now we get to see that river card at our price, not his price.
Yeah.
If he does raise us, I mean, that's the risk. But, you know, maybe at this point, I don't know whether I want to put that much more in this pot. I mean, if he pots it after that, I mean, that's a good chunk of change. And if we check and he pots it, that's also a good chunk of change. I don't think I'm going to want to continue. So in my thinking right now, just looking at it, the only way that I can continue in this hand where I think I might have a shot at winning is to throw out a blocking bet and hope it's just called.
Yeah, I don't know.
Are you going to call a pot-sized bet from him now if you check?
No, I'm definitely not, and that's what I'm saying. And so, why risk any chips here if I know he's going to bet anyway or call?
Yeah, but if you don't, he's going to bet, and you're going to fold. So, I mean, I guess the decision now here is whether you want to continue with his hand or not.
Well, no,
and I'm not saying we should. But
he also showed a penchant for not betting the pot, so I may check to him to see what he bets,
that he bets. Somewhere in the neighborhood of what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, if he bets like 500 or 600, then I may still call. Or, you know, it depends how I feel. If I have a really, I mean, it seems like it's on. I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, it's a $2 tournament, so you don't really know what these players are thinking. And he's
not always a $2 tournament. It's a $2 A game mixed tournament. So remember, you know, people all over the place here. I mean, even if you've got some good $2 players, the chances are of them being good at all eight games is is a stretch, right?
Yeah, and I just want to get back to one thing you said about I would have to have it, because I said it too, I would have to have a hand to bet pot against you if you had come out with that probing bet. You know, really, though, if I was really strong, like if it was live and we were in our home game or if it was in a tournament live and I got a feeling that that's what this guy was doing, he was weak, I don't think I would need a hand to bet pot there. I'm going with my read, and then if I'm wrong, I probably have outs. But
okay, that's a good point.
But, you know, this is tough. This is tough. It's a good spot right here to really talk about it. So I don't know. I still don't think I bet. I think I check. I think I would have done something different on the flop maybe, and now I wouldn't be in this position. But right here, I think I check in this position he's in. But I like your probing bet, but any really good pot limit Omaha player would see that as weakness and probably pot it regardless and then make us fold. But maybe not. I just can't put you on a straight there with that kind of a bet.
Well, I guess the other thing to think is that the next level of that, you know, we have some outs now. We got a lot of outs now. Now, whether how many of them are good, I don't know. You know, like I said, we have the straight now. We've got the flush, and you know, and we possibly could two pair though if he's going to re-raise us. It's probably so. I mean, maybe we decide at this point we put that probing bet in, and if he re-raises us, you know, hey, we're going to the mat with this hand. It's kind of reckless, I think, but.
And so much for the hey, we'll just call because we have a boatload of chips, and there goes the whole we're gonna spend our whole stack here. So, all right. So what does he do actually? I don't know. What
our
happens.
Hero actually checks, and the villain bets 720.
Yeah.
See, I think that's a very interesting bet because I think that's more than we want to call, isn't it?
I don't know. What was the pot going in?
But it's just enough to make us think about it.
1170. So he bet a little more than half the pot.
Yeah, pot was 1170.
Yeah, we got a lot of outs. If they're good, that's the other thing. Like you said, if he has a king of spades in his hand with another spade, all of our spade outs are gone, and we have to fold. Maybe I fold. I don't know. 720, and I have 4,000 left, so I'd have 32 or so, and there's still that's still like what 550 big blinds or something.
Yeah, maybe.
I will call and see what peels off on the river. What the hell?
Yeah, and then maybe I'll just go into the hole after it too. I mean, because you can't keep playing people like this. You know. I mean, you're allowed to play one mistake hand in a tournament. And this would be it for me. Right, so I had to call here and just hope I get lucky. Because it's a total donk fest at this point, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our hero thinks about it. Says if he calls, if I could call, then fold if I miss, then I would have 3K, which is close to average, as you mentioned. He was again tired of this guy pushing him around. He wants to hit his draw and pot at the end to put them all in. I call and tell myself that I play so bad.
Oh man! Oh,
so, you know,
hear
you. First step is admitting your problem, right? But hey, you know, he's talked us into doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all going down the same Kool-Aid lace path here.
I tell you, the way this guy is betting, it really feels like he doesn't have anything now. Because there's no way if he has a set of aces that he's not betting pot there. And so he's got to have a draw, probably a draw like us. I don't know if I'm willing to put my stack on a call or whatever for that, but he's drawing, and a real good player here would check raise with a pot. Who didn't care about their $2 or care about their buy-in or whatever, because they know that this guy can't have a big hand. So maybe that's what you do. You bet pot now. Me, I'm a big wussy. So I'm folding or calling here. But really, I think the right move would be to bet pot if you've come to that conclusion at this point. There's no way this guy has three aces, so I would pot it.
Okay.
If I had balls, you know.
Yeah. All right. The pot is now 26-10. We have 33-36 left. The villain is 26-77 left. The river is the deuce of hearts. Our final board is the ace of spades, five of spades, nine of hearts, eight of diamonds, deuce of hearts. Our hero says he whiffed, but, you know, he got a second pair out of it.
No, he got a second pair out of it, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So he got two pair, not, yeah.
Huh. It's not a complete whiff. I'm not excited about making contact here, but I did whiff. and he's like, this is not a very good hand to PLO. I know this! So I'm assuming we're checking, right?
Yeah. I mean, we got two pair, and we're happy to show it down. And if he puts another one of those 720 bets out there, I would call probably. But, yeah, I'm happy to just check it down here.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. If we check... I mean, what self-respecting Omaha player is going to check behind?
I guess it just depends on if you're...
Because that deuce really cannot have helped, right? I'm looking at the board. I mean, what did it do? It did nothing. Unless you had tray four. But no one's going to go to the mat with that in their hand unless they had something else going on, which is always the risk in Omaha. But I just can't imagine this guy, our opponent, even if he had been bluffing the whole way, just saying, ha ha, you caught me, I check. You know, he's going to bet something.
Well, here's the deal, though. Again, we don't know these players, and he doesn't know this player either. This guy could be bluffing and thinking that we're, now that we've called again, thinking that we're slow playing a monster. Like, we could have 6-7 because we were in a blind and called a raise and could have had 6-7 and king, you know, 4 with the king 4 of spades, and a 6-7 was the draw that got there. Who knows? So we could be slow playing this guy. Well, and maybe he does check.
Right? We're not going to check the nuts on the river, and that's the nuts right now, correct? 6-7?
Right, but if he knows this guy, I'm just saying, if he knows this guy's aggressive and will bet and keeps betting because that's he's tired, maybe he will try to trap him and check raise on the end. I mean, how many times have you seen that, either on TV or in Apes, when, oh, I thought you'd bet again, and they turn over a full house?
Yeah,
you
know? All right. You're right. I'll
I'm just saying
that.
That's a scenario that could get scenario. Us a cheap showdown. But, again, this guy doesn't show the ability to bet pot, so I'm thinking if he bets pot now, it's fishy, to be honest.
All right, well, we check, and our villain does, in fact, pot it for 26-10, which leaves him 67 behind.
Oh, 67. Oh, man.
You know, I'm sure he would put it all in, but it's pot limit, so, you know, has to keep it behind.
Yeah.
Our hero says he wants to barf now, wonders what he's done. What has he done here, Chris, and what do we do?
Oh, man. Well,
you just said if the guy pots, it's going to seem fishy.
It does.
And I
got to
say, I totally agree with that.
Yeah. It seems like it's one of those why so much bets, you know, when before you weren't willing to do it to protect your hand that you raised. Now all of a sudden you've made a hand. Let me guess, you have 3-4 in your hand? I don't think so.
But even if it's 3-4, you wouldn't bet that much. I mean,
right.
I mean, every once in a while, this overshove does work. I get it. I've done it myself once or twice. But
yeah, yeah.
In this particular situation, it doesn't add up to where you would need to do that, I don't think. This guy's checked all the way down, and now you're betting pot. I mean, what are you trying to run him off of?
Yeah. Man, it's so sick to make this
action
call.
At a $1,300 bet here, I think, with anything, you know?
Yeah.
The guy's got, like, two pair and is going to fold, which is exactly what we have. $1,300 is going to do the job just as much as $2,600, right?
I agree.
And less fishy.
Yeah, I agree. It's so sick to make this call here. It really is. Oh, man.
These are one of the situations where I'm happy I'm in a $2 tournament and not the one shot that I get at my World Series, you know, that I've saved up all year, you know.
Yeah.
The $2 tournament, you know, I think, and again, I mean, everybody's bankrolls differently, so maybe a $2 is huge for some people or our hero, but I think these are the kind of calls you got to make and those things so you learn from them. So when you're in the $20 tournament or the $200 or the $2,000 tournament, you'll know what to do.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, I'm going to let you take me off the hook, and I'm going to agree with you and say that it was.
Blame me when it goes wrong.
Well, no, because I did say it was fishy beforehand, that if he did that, it would be fishy, and he did do it. So it does feel like one of those, I'm going to shove here, and he can't possibly call me because I want to cover my ass for bluffing all the way down. I mean, it does take a lot of heart to bluff 3 times in a row, but it feels so much like a draw the whole way that deuce couldn't have made his draw. So I think we might be ahead, and I'll call. I'll call too. And you know what? And even if we're wrong, we'll still have like 800 or something, and that's still more than 10 big blinds. You never know. So, I mean, somebody at the table right now before the hand started had 900, and yeah, they're in the tournament. So, all right, I'm calling.
They're in the tournament.
Yeah, they're in it, so I'm calling.
All right, after a long time, our hero does think about it, finally makes the crying call.
He does.
Yeah, he just calls. He thought about it wasn't worth risking the extra 67. In hindsight, it would have been funny if he folded. The villain shows 10 of spades, jack of spades, 8 of spades, 6 of diamonds.
Oh, he had a smaller 2-pair and a flush draw. And a wrap, I guess a kind of a wrap, but not really a wrap. Oh, my God. I guess a king or a 9 would have given him a straight 2, so he had like a belly buster. Oh, man, so we win.
We win. 78-38 propelled us to third place, where we got cooler 2 hands in a row in PLO. But, hey, you know, I like to try to come away with lessons from these hands of the week.
Yeah.
And this is a funny one where we said at the beginning, we probably shouldn't play it. And if we do play it, stick to your plan. Then we broke our plan. Then we talked ourselves into getting like everything in, and we ended up winning. So all of this was reinforced, not doing anything, you know. Going with your gut, which is the wrong thing, but.
Wow. Wow, that was a great hand. I didn't think, when it started out, I didn't think it was going to be a hand that I was going to be like excited about. But when it got toward the end, yeah, I love when you surprise me with these hands. That was pretty wild.
I try not to put any boring hands of the week on.
I really did, in the beginning, think that the guy had a decent hand. But when he wouldn't bet pot in Pot Limit Omaha, not that you always have to bet pot. I don't agree with that. But I'm just saying, when you have position and you're showing aggression and you're not betting pot, even on a turn, you're not trying to protect the hand on the pot, you're weak. And that's what it showed to me. And then when he was fishy on the end, the story didn't add up. And it's a great hand, man. Great hand. Nice job.
Well, Chris, we do appreciate signing in. We also appreciate you letting us know that you were a multiple swag winner and you did not need any swag. You just need us to rip the hand apart, which we did, and you ripped us right into it. So
we gladly obliged.
We went off the same plank with you. But everybody else, please email your hands of the week to podcast@andyupmagazine.com, and we'll break them down, and hopefully we'll have a good friend, Lee Childs, back, who is still at the World Series, hopefully making lots and lots of money.
I want to thank Chris Rose from The Big Game for joining us today. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.